welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 244 of the podcast. And it is the 23rd of November, 2015, as I record this on a gorgeous, sunny, but freezing morning in Bath. It's as if over the last few days, nature has suddenly remembered it's almost December and it's turned really chilly. And I expect there'll be frost soon. And my mum came over and she said, oh, the holly, you know, the holly berries are, there's loads of them this year. And the birds are out, which means it's going to snow. So there you go. Word from my mum means we're going to have a snowy winter in Britain. We shall see. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving this week to those of you over the pond. And we all have a lot to be thankful for this week. And I'm as ever thankful for you listening and for the ability to be able to make a living as a creative, you know, these days. It's very exciting. So today I have an interview with Catherine Goldman on estate planning for authors. Now, don't turn off just yet if that sounds a bit dry. So Catherine is a US attorney. It's actually really exciting. And you know, I get excited about things to do with intellectual property rights. So I will be, both Catherine and I are super excited about the topic. Catherine is an attorney, as I say, and what we talk about is what you need to set up for the inevitable future. If you want your intellectual property to continue earning 70 years after you die and provide for your heirs and successors, and I know I certainly do, then you will want to carry on listening to today's interview. I also had an author friend die earlier this year, and she did an amazing job. She knew she was dying, she had cancer, and she did an amazing job of making sure her estate would continue to earn for her partner. And it was just a very impressive show of love, really, to prepare all of that in advance. And of course, we all love our families and we all want to provide for them even after we're gone. So today in the show, we are facing some really interesting questions about the future. And even if you're on your first book, I hope you'll find this interesting, because writing books and creating intellectual property rights are one of those things that you can do that will actually go on earning after you're gone. And let's face it, that is pretty amazing. So on personal updates, I am about to press publish on the co-writing book and also Risen Gods. So if you are on Thanksgiving or over the weekend wanting something to read, then Risen Gods is getting some great feedback from my early readers, and really proud of that book, actually. Very different. And also the co-writing book, if you're interested in co-writing, will be interesting, although I should warn you, it has some unedited excerpts from our writing diary, so you actually get into our heads, and you'll really feel my anxiety if you're interested. I'll also be announcing to the email list and putting that on the blog, so, but it will definitely, both of those books will be out in the next few days. On translations, I mentioned that Profanación is out in Spanish, and I blogged this week about the various ways that authors can exploit foreign rights. And that is, if you read Spanish or you know people who read Spanish, then that is available, and that is desecration in Spanish. And I will soon be announcing how to market a book in French, thanks to Cyril Godefroy, and it's probably surreal Sorry, Cyril. Cyril is very English way to pronounce that name. Cyril is heading the self-publishing charge in France and translated How to Market a Book because he actually has an audience for that book already. So that is a really good match for translation. And of course, with any of my non-fiction, if you have in your country a growing platform around self-publishing, then let me know because I think those are the best partnerships. If you already have a way to market, then that is a good thing. And also a time-sensitive announcement. If you like thrillers, then before the 7th of December, we're having a killer Christmas giveaway. 21 thriller print books, which should help with your Christmas presents. So if you're listening before 7th of December 2015, then go to jfpen.com/xmas15. That's XMAS 15. jfpen.com/xmas15. And you can enter the killer Christmas giveaway for 21 print books. So I've also been doing a ton of technical stuff in the background in the last week. The Creative Pen has actually grown to a point where I needed a more robust hosting solution. So I've moved to a sort of premium service, which really most people won't need, but because of the traffic, and I had a couple of I need to pay more, basically, when it comes down to it, you know. So I've moved to a premium service. Also, because these premium hosting services separate email, I've had to change my email provider. Plus, I've also been doing stuff with my email list management. So there is kind of big things that you need to do as you grow every couple of years. You know, for example, you might start out on a free website, as I did, and then you have to migrate to a paid website. And of course, if you do need a website, there is a tutorial, thecreativepen.com/author website. I've done a tutorial on how you can make your own. So that's a kind of the first step. And then, you know, as you grow again, you need premium themes, for example, and then you need better hosting, you know. So it's like there are always different problems depending on what level you are. And these are some things I've been putting off a while we moved house. And so I'm really happy that I've done those things and can tick off some really big stuff off my list. December the 8th this year marks the beginning of year 8 for the creativepen.com. So yeah, exciting times. In publishing news, it's funny at the moment. It's a kind of there's nothing major, but Amazon launched Storywriter, a free screenwriting tool this week, which is interesting because, of course, they want more scripts for Amazon TV, and the fragmentation of media is really fascinating because there are so many more channels that we can actually reach now. I mean, even just web TV shows, as well as Netflix, you know, Amazon, all of these. YouTube now doing their own programming. So, and I'm very encouraged by Jessica Jones. I started watching that this week, as that kind of dark thriller is actually quite similar to my London Psychic Crime Thriller series. So I have actually booked a 2-day workshop in February for adapting Deviance, which I'm assured is the most appropriate for adaptation. So we'll see how that goes. But I know if you've been listening for the past couple of years, you'll know I've flirted with treatments and I've been to the London Screenwriters Festival. I have considered paying someone to adapt. And now I'm like, okay, just do it. Just get on with it. And it's interesting, Amazon Storywriter, of course, their aim is to facilitate more stories going into their own Amazon Studios. So that's interesting. Also, for those of us gearing up for the Christmas promotion or the holiday promotion period, Free Booksy now have a freebooksy.com now have a feature to promote series, which is brilliant. So if you have a series, you can submit the whole series. The first book in the series has to be free, as My Stone of Fire is free, and I've submitted that. The promotion will run, I think, on Black Friday or Thanksgiving, I can't remember, but it will essentially it's just a nice new thing. I think promoting series is an excellent idea. I'm also heading back to London today. I'm seeing Elizabeth Gilbert speak, and she wrote Eat, Pray, Love all those years ago and was re responsible for Ubud in Bali becoming what it is today. And I also recently enjoyed her book on creativity, which is called Big Magic. So that'll be cool going into London to see her. So here's what you've sent me this week. I mentioned I love snakes. They're like my totem animal. And Yatia sent some pictures of the venomous water moccasin and also pygmy rattlesnake from the Everglades. Thanks for that, Yatia. Awesome. A place I want to visit, definitely. Tim Morgan says, the last 6 months I've taught myself how to animate while listening to the podcast, which is really cool. And Tim says, I'll admit there's a lot more work to do, but it's the achievement of a lifelong dream. That's fantastic. Tim, I'm really stoked about that. Amar Vyas, listening to the podcast while editing my nano novel. Podcast on TV sounds good too. So Amar is streaming through the TV. That's really good. That's excellent. I always think of it as being on a phone or a small device. And of course, Amar, by next show, you should be almost done on your novel, I suppose. What if you're editing already, then well done. Leah Stella Stevens says, I'm listening every day as I deliver various bland packages to strangers. So I'm presuming you're like working for FedEx or something. So that's cool. JF Erickson, a picture of Colorado Springs after a recent storm. I listened to your show while grocery shopping. Excellent. And I'll be coming to Denver in Colorado next October. So I looked on a map and I think Colorado Springs is not too far away. So I will look forward to coming to your part of the world. Anne O'Connell, I've been listening to the podcast while walking my dog Esther in Connecticut, and a lovely picture of shadows walking out in the sun. Sarah Rosette, or Sarah, says a picture of the on the road again, and sent a picture of the podcast in the dashboard of the car, which is cool. R. Brady Frost, listening about writing collaboration in rainy Dallas, Texas, and sent a really terrible rainy motorway shot, and quite depressing. So I hope if you are listening in the car in the rain that today you enjoy a happy giggly show about death. No, about estate planning. Let's face it, it's happy times. And then the Twitter handle is The Blog Factory. So I'm not quite sure what your name is, blog factory, sitting at home in the car while the baby sleeps, and picture of the snoozing baby. Lisa Dering, listening while walking to the library. And Jez De Silva, listening on the way to Ruby Gap in the Northern Territory, Australia, and a great Northern Territory picture. Gotta love that red earth, Jez. So thanks for that. So today's episode is sponsored by 99designs.com, and you can get a free power pack upgrade at 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. And of course, we have just used 99 Designs for a new custom illustration, a map of New Zealand for the front of Risen Gods, a dark fantasy novel. So you will see that if you purchase the book, which I should mention is on special at 99 cents for the first week before the price goes up. So grab it now. So basically, when you use 99 Designs, you specify, you create a new contest and you put your requirements. So I said, I want a black and white map of New Zealand for the front of a novel, image quality for printing in a book, and also a vector file for resizing and web use, and various JPEGs for web use. And so I also specified that the country needed to be accurate, and specified the exact places I wanted on it, and that the book is dark fantasy, supernatural thriller based on the Maori gods and natural disaster sort of apocalyptic style. So we would like some elements of design around that. And that kind of description is a similar idea whether you're creating a book cover or a website design. You need to be to specify what you want, what you are going to use it for, who the sort of audience are, what is the feel around what you're doing, and if you have any other elements of design. So for example, if you want a book cover, then I would always include some links to book covers that you like and that are in your genre. So you know, my book is similar to Nora Roberts, this type of book, or Stephen King, this type of book. And that will help designers get the right emotional feel and the right colour palette for the book, and also for our map. And then once you start getting designers, and also one thing I learned was about doing a blind competition or a blind contest, which is when the other designers can't see the other designs. Now, There's pros and cons on this because, of course, if you use a blind contest, if you specify, oh, I like that bit on one person's, then the others don't get the ability to see that. So you'll get very, very diverse designs. Now, that also might be a good thing. So it's quite difficult to know. I didn't do blind on this one, but I think if I did a map again, I would do blind. Then once you have a number of designs, you rate them and see which ones you like, and then you can do a poll and you can share it with your readers, with your social media, with your email list if you want. And we really like two specific maps, and we decided to go with the one that won the poll, so that was very cool. Now, if you use the Power Pack upgrade, which is worth $99, then you get a highlighted background and you'll get more designers submitting. So remember, you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for that free Power Pack upgrade. And you can get book covers, you can get custom illustration, web page designs, social media, banners, headers, posters, postcards, flyers, t-shirts, mugs, and so much more. Da, da, da. Okay, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and the transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Tracy Ashworth, Seamus with no surname. Hello, Seamus. Doris Ross, Jay Hatton, Jenny Wyman and Lee Anderson. Thank you, everybody, and everybody supporting on Patreon. I sent out the November extra Q&A to Patreon supporters, and also now there is a link to listen to the previous Q&As. So if you join and support on Patreon, you will get the link to the extra audios. And all Patreon supporters should have got that message with the link and also the form for questions. And as ever, I really, really appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. So if you want to support the show, you can do that with even just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, let's get on with the interview with Catherine. Today I'm here with Catherine Goldman. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Joanna. How are you?
I'm great. It's so good to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. So Catherine is an intellectual property attorney who protects writers, artists, filmmakers, and businesses from having their work and art ripped off, which is brilliant. And today we're talking about estate planning, which I am super interested in. But Catherine, just start by telling us a bit about your background and why you care particularly about authors and artists.
Let me start very quickly by saying, first of all, I'm not an estates and trusts attorney, that I'm a copyright attorney. But over the years, I've represented a number of artists and writers who have had copyright issues. Estates issues. Mm-hmm. Some of them are second generation artists and have inherited copyrights from their parents. And so we've had to deal with that. So I've become sensitive to these issues over time, and that's how I've learned about them. As we talk today, really my goal is just to make everybody more thoughtful about how they handle their rights. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that I'm a copyright attorney and not an estates and trusts lawyer. But aside from that, my interest in artists and writers, I grew up surrounded by artists and writers. My mom was a dean of the Maryland Institute College of Art, and so she was always bringing home stray artists for dinner. And my dad was a newspaper editor, so I was always surrounded by the writerly type. And my undergraduate degree is in art history. Yeah, so it's an odd thing, art history to law. So I have a fondness for writers and artists. And as a lawyer, I have a skill set that I believe can really help artists and writers. So my goal is to help them learn what their rights are, enforce their rights so that they can protect their art and make a living from it.
Which is all fantastic. And I mean, I wonder if you have any opinion on why do our authors and artists in particular have such an aversion to law and the legal stuff?
Well, it's not just artists and writers who have an aversion to the law. Everybody considers talking to their lawyer like eating spinach. You know, it's just not anybody's favorite thing. But you know, once you get used to it and once you understand what your rights are, it's less daunting and you become more comfortable with dealing with the law in your business and in your work if you understand it. And so maybe it's because people don't understand it so much. And I really try to make it understandable and make the law accessible to creative types.
Mm. At the end of the day, it's mainly a language that we don't understand, isn't it? That's basically
yes.
It.
Well, you know, I think lawyers, it's they write many times so that people don't understand, which is unfortunate. But, you know, you shouldn't have to have a translator to understand the law. So I try to break it down and make it understandable for people.
Yeah, exactly. And there are some really key things. Now, as I mentioned to you, we've had Helen Sedgwick on the show before talking about copyright and some of those things. But today I wanted to talk about estate planning because I saw an article that you wrote and it's something I'm really hot and into, particularly because I like graveyards and things. And I think about mortality a lot. But just start by explaining what is estate planning anyway and why is it important for authors to consider it?
Okay. Well, estate planning is basically succession planning for your worldly goods. It's making decisions about what happens to your stuff after you die. And the fact is that copyright in your written work or in your artwork lasts a lot longer than you do. And so you have this period that you get to control what happens to those copyrights from the grave, essentially, in your will or in a trust document. And so estate planning with respect to intellectual property, which is all we're going to be talking about today, is what you want to think about when you, how you want your works handled after you die. And so that's what we're talking about with respect to your creative portfolio and estate planning, the controls that you're going to put on the work after you die. Copyright lasts in England and in the US and in many other countries 70 years after your death. So that's a pretty long time that you need to be thinking about where your portfolio could be generating income for your heirs or your charities of choice. And so that's what estate planning is all about, making those plans.
Mm. And I personally find it really exciting, you know, because this is a very new thing for indies as well. I think, you know, people in the old school, you know, agents dealt with this type of thing, but we're in this new world now where indies are dealing with their own stuff. So the fact that we might still be able to earn money for our heirs and successors, you know, 70 years after we die, I think is like a magic, exciting thing. But does everyone react like me?
Writers of a certain age react like you do. Younger writers that I work with do not have, they're immortal. I work with poets and writers who are in their 20s, and people in their 20s are still immortal, so it just doesn't cross their mind, but I impress upon them that this is something that they need to think about. But to go to your point about it being new for indies, it is very new. When did self-publishing really come on the scene? You know, when did everybody start buying Kindles? You know, 2007, 2008, is that when it really popped?
2011, I think, when it really popped, you know.
Right. Mm. So this whole notion of managing, of self-published writers managing their rights after they die or in a will or trust document is so new that the support systems haven't developed yet for it. And so I think we're going to be seeing those support systems developing over time.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think this is a big missing thing. Because, of course, I mean, and I've known in the 5 years I've been doing this, several writers who've died early. Obviously, there's diseases and things happen mm-hmm. and people have died. And it's been like, well, what do you do? Because self-publishing has got so many, like, log-ons for a start. I mean, log-ons are just a crazy thing. But before we get into the detail, back on the age thing. So mm-hmm. when should authors be thinking about this? Is it more a case of how many books you have or how much money you're making rather than age, for example?
Well, I think that it's probably a good idea to have some kind of will as early as possible. It doesn't need to be extraordinarily detailed at the beginning of your career. And as your career develops and as you have more books, and you want to be thinking about maybe doing one thing with one set of books and one thing with another set of books. I mean, you, for example, have two very different writing personalities. You have your fiction and your nonfiction. Mm. And it may be that your fiction books lend themselves to a certain disposition and your nonfiction books lend themselves to a different disposition. And even within your fiction books, you have a variety of series that, you know, you could do different things with. I think you should think about it earlier, and then as your work, body of work, becomes more developed, you can tweak it. You can start, you know, okay, I want to change this, I want to change that. But I think that it's something that you should think about early, because as you just mentioned, people die prematurely. They could be involved in, you know, a car accident, or they could get sick or whatever. And then all of a sudden, here they have a dozen works and they have, you know, multiple logons, and they have all of these different pieces of their business that they've been managing themselves. And somebody has to swoop in, scoop it all up, and sort it all out. Mm. And that's what you want to avoid as a writer. You want to avoid that kind of chaos in the event of your early demise. If you live a nice, long, healthy life, then you really get to plan it out and be very pristine and very, you know, clear about what you're going to do. And it's easier that way.
Mm. But so many people don't necessarily know when they're going to die. Obviously, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this because a friend of mine did die earlier this year, you know, a young woman, and she was super organized. She knew she was dying. And in the last 9 months of her cancer, you know, she documented everything. Like, she was brilliant about it. And I'm sitting here thinking, I still haven't done that. I promised I would do it earlier this year, and I still haven't done that. You know, so I guess, what are some of the things that should be covered? I mean, normally when you go to a lawyer, you wouldn't say, here are my logons and things like that. But, you know, what are the things that are covered by, say, a will versus things that authors need to do separately?
Well, so record keeping, okay, good bookkeeping. There should be an inventory of your creative portfolio. You should have that inventory. And when you first go to a lawyer to have a will drafted, you should have that inventory in your possession. You should be keeping a list of all of your accounts and all of their passwords, all of your licenses, if you license your work, and all of the sources of your income streams. All of that should be nice and orderly and more printed out. My recommendation, and this is actually a good week to talk about this, is that you should update your list of accounts and passwords when you change the clocks.
Ah, good point.
So it's like, okay, we're falling back an hour this week, so let's go through. I mean, I have a list of my accounts and my logons and my passwords, and I just cross it out and maintain the list, and I just did it this week to make sure that everything's current. So you want to have that. You want to have your inventory. And then when you get your will created, you want to keep them all together in a place where, and you want to let your executor know that they are your executor and give them a copy of everything. Now, updating that list of passwords every 6 weeks, every 6 months is good for you. I don't think you need to send that to your executor every 6 months. That would be a great habit to get into. But as long as they know where to find it, I think that's what's important.
So the what you do with the attorney or the lawyer would be this is the person or the organization that now owns the copyright, for example, but you would do a separate document that didn't go to the lawyer with all the logons and actual things that you would need practically.
Right. Okay. So the way it works is your copyrights become part of your estate. All right. And then when you go to see an estate and trust lawyer to have your will drafted, you select a personal representative who will manage your estate. And that personal representative is in charge of gathering up all the assets and reporting to the heirs based on the instructions in the will and based on the rules and laws of the local jurisdiction. That's a standard operation. For self-published authors, what we're talking about is also designating a literary trustee, someone who is responsible for the management of your creative portfolio, not a personal representative who handles your estate. So the literary trustee's focus is simply on managing the revenue streams from your creative portfolio. Those revenue streams then would be parsed out to the heirs as indicated in the will. So that person works with the personal representative. So the question becomes, there are a lot of questions in choosing that person. Who is the best person for that job? What are the qualities that you want to look for in a person to do that job? First of all, you want somebody who's willing to do the job. You want somebody who has some experience, if not expertise, in the self-publishing industry. Somebody who has good business judgment, good sense, and knows how to negotiate a contract and a license. Given the nature of marketing of self-published books, you need somebody who has expertise or experience in social media marketing and other types of marketing. And who knows where the marketing is going to go? I mean, you know, as we're sitting here today, it's Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and your blog and YouTube and podcasts and these things. But who knows where that's going to go? So you have to consider what your business looks like now and who is going to be a match for continuing that business model and who's going to be innovative enough to go with whatever the flow is in the next 10 years, 20 years, 70 years out. So that's a very complicated set of criteria or qualifications that you have to consider. And it may not be your sister.
Yeah, it probably won't be your sister.
No. That's exactly right. But it might be your sister who benefits from the income that's produced. We talked about what the qualifications were for choosing a literary executor.
Yeah.
So now let's talk a little bit about what their duties should be so we can be a little more specific about what it is they're going to be doing as an executor of your creative portfolio. Okay. So you have to decide how much power they have over your work, okay? Whether they have absolute power and that they can make any decision that you could make with respect to your work. Can they issue new licenses? Can they terminate old licenses? Can they change license arrangements in terms of the fees, in terms of the cost of the license? Can they hire a lawyer? Can they redesign covers? Can they choose who's going to do an audiobook? So what are the duties that you're going to give them? What about, for instance, if you have unfinished manuscripts?
Oh, yeah. Do not publish them.
Do not publish them? Okay. All right. What about your emails?
Ooh.
Okay. Do you want them all destroyed? Can they publish them? Can they do a biography of you? I mean, think about that. That's not what you're thinking about right now because that's not your creative undertaking at the moment. But if somebody becomes the literary trustee of your body of work, that's going to include your notes, that's going to include your emails, it's going to include your blog posts, your podcast, it's going to include everything. Can they create a compendium? Can they put together a collection? Can they submit part of your work to a collection with other writers? So, I mean, the questions get pretty big.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't even have to be dead because, like, we look at Harper Lee, what's happened with Ghost Head of Watchmen, and I don't think that she would have wanted that out there. I really just can't see that she would want a first draft of a book that became a classic. And that's basically what it was, right?
And, yep.
But she is mentally, well, we don't know what she is, but she's still alive. So, I mean, that was just crazy. And I would hate that to happen.
We suspect that she doesn't have the mental competence to make the decision to publish Go Set a Watchman, okay? Mm. And somebody is definitely making those decisions or assisting strongly in making those decisions for her. Yeah, and I... Okay, so then, let's put it to you this way. You put all your rules and all your wishes and desires about how your work's going to be handled in your will. And you have a group of heirs that are going to benefit from those rules being followed. And then if the literary trustee doesn't follow the rules, or if the heirs decide that you really didn't mean those rules that you put in there, can the heirs remove the literary trustee? So do you want to have that in as a provision in your will? You want to think about whether that literary trustee is going to get along with your heirs. You know, because there's quite possibly going to be some head knocking involved.
I don't even get on with my heirs, my siblings. I mean, this is the reality is, I mean, most people's heirs and successors are family, aren't they? And,
yes.
You know, that's where, you know, as Shakespeare wrote, where most of the problems are. So that is really, really interesting. Okay, is there anything else on that? Because I have another question.
Okay, let's see. Nope, I think that covers what the duties are of a literary executor.
Fantastic. So my question is, many indies, of course, will self-publish just under their personal names and they won't have set up an LLC or in England a limited company or something like that. But I have a limited company. So the author retains the copyright, but I publish everything under my company. And a company can survive longer than a copyright, correct? I mean, as long as the company continues to run, me as an individual, I can be dead and the company can carry on. So how does having a publishing company and an LLC or a limited company relate to this topic, and how should the rights be done in that way?
Well, it really depends upon what you intend. And when you talk about having your own company, Who's the owner of that company? Is it you?
Yeah, I'm the director, and there's me and my husband are both directors. Yeah.
So you own it 50-50 with him?
50-50 shareholding, yeah.
Right, so that 50% is going to be in your will because that becomes an asset of your estate. Mm. And so you can then decide what happens to that 50%. Mm. But for some self-published writers who own the company in its entirety, that becomes an asset of the estate, just like the copyrights become an asset of the estate. So the company can go on and on beyond your death without a limit, like a copyright does have that 70-year limit in the U.S. and the U.K. So you can either transfer the copyrights into the company, which would in the United States have to be a transfer in writing, or you can have the literary trustee work with the director of the company jointly, much like you're doing now, only you happen to be one person, a director and the owner of the copyright.
Yeah.
So, but somewhere in you're working together.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so I think ahead to when I have this massive empire, and I would employ a CEO who could run the company, even if they weren't a shareholder. So the shareholdings would get divested, or whatever the word is, so that my heirs get the money from that. But the company could still be run by what would be the equivalent of a literary estate manager or something.
So if you had a COO running your company and your company is predominantly earning its income based on your creative portfolio, then it's unlikely that you would need a literary trustee. I mean, because you've got somebody running the company. You've got somebody who's negotiating the contracts, negotiating the licenses, monitoring the income, doing the marketing. You've already set that up in a company. You're not going to need a literary trustee. What you're going to need is a written contract that exists past your death, allowing your company to use those copyrights. You need that license in writing. Okay. So role for a literary trustee in managing that license, but that role is going to be a lot smaller if you have a fully operating company that is monetizing your creative portfolio.
Hmm.
So I see, as your empire grows and you have dozens of employees, the larger your company becomes, the less need you're going to have for a literary trustee. That's how I see that working that way.
Yeah, no, me too. Obviously most people are not, have the global media empire mindset that I do. Some people will, but others will be like, well, I just have two books and I want, my daughter or my son to benefit from that. What is an appropriate amount to be paying a literary trustee? So you would pay an agent 15%.
Right.
So is that what we're sort of talking about?
Well, that would be perfectly acceptable if you could find somebody to do the work for 15%. And think about it. If you are an indie with just two books and you're making a living off of those two books, which is great.
Unlikely.
It is unlikely. So what are the chances you're going to find somebody to accept the job of doing everything you do except the creative part, but all of the marketing, all of the management, all of the sales for 15% when you as the author are getting 100%? So right now, I don't know how many people are out there to accept that level of work for a 15% commission for an indie who only has two books. Okay?
Yeah.
So, but if there's a series, if you have a series and it has proven income generation, you're more likely to get somebody out there who is going to manage those rights and manage that portfolio for 15%. So that's the, you know, the mark would be 15%. If you talk to lawyers, they're going to want an hourly fee, which is on the other end of the spectrum. It is not a good deal.
No.
That's not a good deal. So that's why we have to have this growth of this industry. It really has to happen. And then there's going to be a vetting of the self-published authors, the indie authors, to determine whether their books are earning something that would justify the amount of work for a non-creator to put in it to continue that piece of creative work.
Yeah, no, I totally get you. And of course, I do 50-50 splits with co-authors, translators, you know, that type of thing. And that often, you know, that can feel unfair sometimes, depending on how much work each party does. And you know, the 50-50 is a good thing. But equally, that, like you're saying, I mean, once the author is dead, we have to face it. The work is all being done by that literary trustee. So and it doesn't make sense for the heirs and successors to make loads of money when they're doing nothing. So I totally get your point there.
So the business model has to be developed.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it's going to have to be very flexible so that people will go into the business, so that they will start managing these rights, and then they're going to have to learn what they can earn and what is fair in exchange for the amount of labor that they're putting in. Through this, as people start going into that business, otherwise you're not going to get anybody to help you out.
No, and I like your idea when you said up front about the my two different things. I mean, it would make sense for my thrillers to go to a thriller literary trustee, and my nonfiction to go into some writing, you know, stuff for writers type of area. Although I think that often nonfiction ages, you know, fast, and fiction doesn't age. You know, stories go on.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, because your nonfiction books have a shelf life based on the technology that you're writing about today, if you think about that in that sense, So, and your fiction doesn't.
Yeah.
Because a good mystery, a good thriller, people go back to them all the time. I go back and read from the 30s and 40s all the time. Good plot is good plot. It lasts,
And it's actually funny you say that, because I actually like I like keeping the print copies of my nonfiction almost so I can remember what it was like, a couple of years ago. So, and I'm like, I wrote that? How did I write that? That's so not true now.
Right. That's right. But what it does is it shows that you have the background and have been following the industry since, since it was taking those little baby steps.
Which is fascinating. And what's also interesting, looking at the big literary agencies, most of them are built on the back of dead authors, right? I mean,
yes.
They're built on money that's made from authors, like Ian Fleming's estate, for example, Tolkien's estate. And I guess maybe we just don't feel like we'll ever be like that. But how will we know, I guess?
Well, you won't. You'll be dead.
Yeah. Let's inject some humor into the dead conversation. But no, I think this is brilliant. I really do.
But the writers that come after you are going to watch this and benefit from this. And it will get better over time, and it will get more polished. I think that in these early Wild Wild West days, you have to be careful, because people who would be less than honest might jump up and try and take advantage of indie published authors. So I think you have to be careful, and I think you have to do your homework until it shakes out and you see what's gone on before. Now, one idea, and I haven't thought this through completely, but one idea is the indie co-op. Right, and to get indie, right? You say you agreed to be a trustee, a literary trustee for some of your friends who are writers. Okay. So, but that's still you out there on your own. But what about an indie co-op that really manages these rights and that there's some kind of coalition or group of indies that are answering this question and really brainstorming this question and setting up a structure to address it? It's contrary to how most of you guys work.
Yeah. It'd be like herding cats, it really would.
I know.
Everyone's so opinionated.
let me just throw in this one little item that I want everybody to be aware of when they choose a literary trustee. If they choose a company, if these companies do, you know, come into existence, make sure that there's a provision in there that says if the company goes bankrupt, that the contract is terminated and that those rights revert back to the estate to be redistributed to some other viable literary trustee. Because, and on this carries over into traditional publishing, where publishing houses have gone bankrupt and the copyrights are in the estate of the publishing house and they don't go back to the author to be lost forever. So I just want to throw that out there because that applies equally with this, you know, new frontier that we're facing.
Yeah, so then obviously you're in the US. Will these things be different by country? I mean, they sound pretty similar to the UK, to be fair. You know, what are there any country-specific things people should watch out for?
So copyright law is one of the most international laws that is out there right now because of the Berne Convention. So the fact that your copyrights live longer than you do, that's a pretty international concept. Now, how much longer they live differs by country. And it ranges from life plus 25 years to right now in Mexico, it's life plus 100 years. I understand, rumor has it, that's changing shortly. But so the length of the term might be different by country, but the fact that the rights survive the life of the author is the same internationally. So the considerations that indie authors have are going to apply internationally. You've got to think about what happens to your rights after you die in just about every country in the world, except, you know, there are some countries that I'm not clear on copyright existing beyond the life of the author in some African countries right now. So that's going to be international in flavor. What's really local in flavor is the estates and trusts piece of it. So in the United States, we have 50 states and a bunch of territories, and the estates and trust law is different in every single state. And not only that, but the procedures are different in every single county in every single state. So to put the pieces together, you need a local lawyer. You can't avoid that. The concept is international in flavor. The things that we've been talking about in terms of the business, that's going to be international in flavor. Mm-hmm. But making it, the mechanics of it are going to be very local.
Yeah, which is pretty hardcore. So just as a really basic thing, if listeners want to go into a local attorney's office and get this sorted out, what do they go in and ask for?
Well, I think you want an estates and trusts attorney who has some familiarity with intellectual property rights, okay? So you want to know that they have some experience with other creative professionals and have handled the wills or trusts of other creative professionals so that they know how it works, that they know how the mechanisms are developing. And that would be the preliminary question. and, you know, get some examples of people that they've represented, and then go in with your list of copyrights. This is my creative portfolio. And then with an idea of what kind of income you're making from it, so that you can have a meaningful conversation about who to choose as a trustee, who to choose as a personal representative, and making decisions about your heirs and how you're going to divide it up, or whether you're going to choose to give it to charity, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and just on that, I wanted to tell everyone, you know, Beatrix Potter, who's one of, you know, my heroines, was child-free, as I am, and left her estate to the National Trust, basically bought the Lake District in Britain with the proceeds of her books. And, you know, I just think there's amazing things that can be done with estates, right? It is very exciting when you think about it. So you also have this great rip-off protection guide for creatives. So just tell us a bit about that, and where to find that, so people can find a bit more about you as well.
Well, you can find out about me at my website, which is www.charmcitylegal.com. The Rip-Off Protection Report for Creative Professionals is something that I developed to give some very basic pointers to creative professionals on how to protect their work online and offline. It talks about the notion of estate planning, talks about good bookkeeping, record keeping, talks about what goes into a fair agent's agreement if you choose to do that, and it gives you some basic pointers on copyright law and how to protect your work. And then that, of course, puts you on my mailing list, and I try to email podcasts such as this one, and blog posts and various things on topics to educate creatives on how to continue to protect their work. I just finished an online course for creative professionals. It was a live course, and I called it Content Protection for Creative Professionals. Lasted for 4 weeks, and we met weekly and talked about their portfolios and how to protect them. And then I gave them some real good action steps so that they can go off and put it into their workflow. But my goal is to try to educate artists and writers so that they really don't need to call me unless they're really stuck.
And people can get the Rip-Off Protection Guide at your website.
Right on my website, on the homepage, or on my profile page, or, you know, any of the blog posts, there's a link there. So
brilliant.
Thank
you so much for your time, Catherine. That was amazing.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Joanna. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.